song. Oh, can't tee it up better than that. One of the all-time favorite Edmonton owners. And I'm not sure if that's his favorite song or not, but Fernando Pisani joins us now. Pisy, how you doing?
I'm doing good, buddy. Thanks for the lead-off with the great song.
Oh, now, rumor has it that you kiboshed them playing that song after you scored. True?
I never kiboshed it. I just asked them whose idea it was, and it wasn't... I don't know. Is that something I think I wanted to hear after my goal?
Okay, so what song? Because I've talked about this. I always thought when a player scores a goal, like in baseball, when you come up to the plate, you get a song. I would love it if when a player scores a goal on home ice, they played a song that he thought was awesome that got everybody going. I think that would be great. So what would be your song?
That's not a song that gets everybody going, though.
Well, I know. No, I agree. So what would be your song then? Like, what song would you have liked to play after you scored?
You know what? I don't know. That's a good question. I'm a big Bon Jovi fan. Oh. Maybe Living on a Prayer or something.
Okay. Hey, nothing wrong with that. Because everybody would sing along every time he scored.
Yeah, yeah. But probably not the ABBA song there.
No, that wasn't your... Man, your teammates must have played that for you, though, quite a bit.
You know what? Pretty much all throughout college, I heard that song, so... Never got old.
Well, hey, could be worse things, right?
Yeah, that's true.
It could be worse. Now, we were here in Edmonton, unfortunately. I'm sure when you went to that cup run, and you, even as a player, you probably thought, man, I'm sure Edmonton will be back in the playoffs at some point. I thought I would be back as a player at some point, and it's never happened. How often do Oilers fans come up to you still and be like, man, I love you even more now because you're the last great memory I had as a hockey fan?
Yeah, I've had a few people come up to me and not only say that, but say I should come back and play. So I've had a few compliments that way. But you know what? It's pretty unfortunate the way the team's been finishing the last 7-8 years now. So it'd be nice for them to get in the playoffs and just to have that experience and play in front of a great fan base. So, I truly enjoyed it, and it was a blast for me.
As a member of the alumni, is it hard to watch? Like, are you that much of a fan, or even more of a fan because you're like, man, I used to wear that jersey?
You know what? Truthfully, I haven't watched as many games as I'd like. I've just been real busy with helping out with the UV Bears. We just won the national championship on the weekend, so and been coaching my boys, so that pretty much keeps me pretty busy. So I don't really have too much time to watch a lot of the games. If I do, it's maybe a period here or there.
You were helping out with the Golden Bears. They won the national championship. What were you doing this year? And as coaching something at that high of a level, you're looking at getting into more seriously?
You know what? I'd love to work with the players. I had a great time working with the Bears, and I definitely learned a lot from Marshy and Herbie as a coaching staff. You can never. It's always good to get different ideas and different ways of doing things to learn, because everybody kind of has their own little way of doing stuff. And I definitely learned a lot this year, and I'd love to get more involved at a higher level as well.
Fernando Pisani joins us, talking a little bit down memory lane, Fernando. And I know you and I have talked about this before, but it's 8 years ago, which seems like really long, and then sometimes it seems like it was just yesterday that it happened. That was the best two-month stretch of your entire NHL career. What went so, like, why did everything fall into place for you then?
You know what? I don't know. It's just everybody... It wasn't necessarily just me. It was the whole team, as a whole. Like, the last 2 months of the season, we were, every game was fighting for our playoff lives to get into it, right? So we were in that mindset heading into the playoffs. And, as soon as we got in, it was like, all right, the monkey's off our back now. Let's just go and play. And, Mac had a great game plan for us, and Billy and Charlie and Simmer. So, everybody was, we had a good veteran group. We had a good core group of guys that knew what we had to do. And we all just went out there and did it. Like, it just all clicked at the right time. And, you know, my line mates were Raffy and Peck. So we, you know, ever since that won the first game, we just collectively knew that what our jobs were and what we had to do and what we had to do to win. And there was literally no doubt in our minds. Like, you know, Detroit was a powerhouse at the time, but we just had a feeling that, you know, we can beat this team. And we had the confidence, the quiet confidence about us, and we went out there and did it.
Did McTavish have a specific game plan against Detroit? Did you guys change your system for that playoff series?
Well, we knew that we had to take away the middle of the ice when you're playing a team like that. They're obviously a great skilled team, and take away their time and space. It wasn't anything, you know, too mind-breaking to do. It was just we had to be at our best. Like, we had to have four lines that, you know, committed to blocking shots, getting the pucks out at the blue line, getting them in at the blue line. It was just the little things that a lot of people don't understand that make a huge part in a game.
That attention to detail, because a lot of people wonder, well, how could they get so hot at that time and maybe not have it before? Was there a different level of dedication from the guys, Fernando, that you look back and say, man, I wish we could have done that on a longer-term basis?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to pinpoint one thing, but, you know, I remember that the beginning of that year, and, you know, Prongs was there, and I'm thinking, wow, this guy's, he's not impressing me too much. But, you know, after the first, I was being dead honest, but after the first 20 games, he was just phenomenal from then on in. Even Pex too, right? Pex wasn't very, he struggled quite a bit at the beginning of the year. And then towards the end, he just started to, his game just took off, right? So it's just, you know, as the games wore on, guys just kind of figured what they had to do and, you know, just got better as the season went on.
Yeah, Pronger in the playoffs, I don't know if I'd ever seen a player dominate games like he did. Like, he was playing half the game and making it look easy.
Yeah, he played 30 minutes plus, and that's just amazing. And his passes were just on the tape and so precise, and he just covered so much of the ice with his wingspan, and he wasn't the fastest guy, but he was pretty smart with where he had to be and, you know, where he wanted guys to go with the puck, and he was just a very intelligent player.
Fernando Pisani joins us. He was also a guy who was not afraid to be cheap on the ice. Would never think twice about sticking a guy. Nice to have those type of guys on your team. And did that resonate around when you saw him? He was just, he was, not that he disrespected any player, but he never gave anybody too much respect.
Well, I remember playing against him when he was in St. Louis, and you'd hate to line up against him because he'd slash you right on top of the laces just as the puck dropped, or if you're in front of the net, he would, you know, try and slash you right in the wrist and between the elbow pad and the glove. So he was pretty fierce. He played hard. He played competitive, and he was one of those guys you didn't want to play against, but you'd love to have him on your team.
Oh, without a doubt, would. Fernando, for you, you know, you didn't score in the first game of the playoffs against Detroit. In the second, you had a goal and an assist, and then it just kind of built from there. Your confidence, you know, because, I don't know, that might have been the first time in your career. Like, I remember fans calling into my show, and everyone was like, well, Pisani's going to score us a big goal. And everybody remembers the shorthanded goal in Carolina in Game 5, and there were so many other ones in San Jose and Anaheim. When was the last time that you felt like a real, man, like, I'm the go-to guy here, and this is awesome?
In that series, or
no, just like prior to that, prior to those playoffs, you know, you in the NHL, you'd never really been that first line guy where everyone expects you to be the goal scorer. But after the first round, even in the second, everyone kind of said, "Well, Pisani's going to be one of our leaders." When was the last time you had had that kind of responsibility on you?
Well, playing in even in the minors when I played with Jason Chimera and Brian Swanson, we were given a lot of, you know, opportunities to, you know, to go against the other team's best line. And, you know, we had a really successful year, falling short in the finals. So in the minors, I had that. And also in college and in the juniors, playing for the Saints, it was, you know, I was on the first line. And but you got to think, every guy that makes it to the NHL is usually the, you know, one of the top scorers in their junior teams. But it's when you get to the next level is what you have to start to figure out what kind of game you have to play to, you know, to stay in the NHL, and I think that's what some guys struggle to do.
That is the hardest thing, right? Because you're right, a lot of guys were scorers, and then you go to the next level and you're not a scorer. For you, I don't know if you ever lose that ability, but you were more of like a third line checker for the most part of your career. After you scored that 14 goals and then got the big contract, did you try to change your game at all to be more of that scorer that you were in the 06 playoffs?
You know what? I don't know. I think you always want to succeed and you always push yourself to, you know, to be that player. But, I tried to maintain the same way I played in those playoffs as every other game. After, like, I didn't think I changed my game too much. It's just, unfortunately they didn't go in as easily as they did in the playoffs and the games after.
Fernando Pisani joins us. Of course, some of your buddies must be listening because your buddy RP says you shouldn't come back playing. You can't even keep up in the outdoor IHL league.
Yeah, I'm sure a few of them are listening right now.
Are you now? Do your buddies? Do you light it up when you play with your friends?
Yeah, I do a little bit. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, you should. Alex Hemsky, probably my favorite line of all time. I was in JJ and Pat's office one day talking. Now, Hemsky was injured in, I think, 2007. And he overheard us talking about men's league. And he sits down and he goes, I can't wait to retire. I'm going to go back home, play men's league with my buddies. And I'm going to dominate. And he said it like straight face. Like Hemsky can dominate NHL guys. He would probably just crush guys in men's league.
Yeah, especially the goal he scored the other night against Tampa Bay. That was pretty amazing to watch. But the IHL, the league's been dwindling the last couple of years due to the outdoor weather and then guys' commitment levels. You know, some guys don't want to wear a helmet out there because they don't want to wreck their hair. So,
Is Strud's playing with you guys? Or is that Strudwick you're talking about? He really likes his hair.
No, well, Strud likes his hair, but he's the one that should wear his helmet.
That's true, actually. A few other ones. Now, you're playing in the... Is this your first time playing in the Alzheimer Face-Off tournament?
Yeah, it's my first year playing in. I've heard a lot of great things about this tournament. A lot of guys who've played in it before. I look forward to playing it. It's on April 11th to the 13th, and it's a pretty cool setup. The teams have to raise about $25,000 to participate in the tournament, and then they do a big draft, and you get to play with... They draft the alumni to play on their team. So it's a pretty neat setup. It's a lot of people I've talked to who've played in it, love it and enjoy it. So I'm looking forward to playing in it this year.
Is your snapshot still there? Can you go shelf?
Yeah, I can still go shelf. I think I lost a little bit of heat off it, but I still think I can get it up there.
Now, are you in game shape? You haven't put on too many lbs.
No, I'm actually in pretty good shape. I still try and hit the gym and you know, not as hard as I did before, but just to stay in somewhat shape.
And what about your? Because I know for a lot of the teams, they're curious. Hey, they want good guys on the ice, but more so they want good guys inside the locker room and potentially sharing some. Alcoholic beverages at some point with their team. How's your partying day? Can you still go? Can you still go a few good shifts?
I don't know. My partying days are pretty much over, but wouldn't mind having a few pops with some guys and having a few laughs and rip on Strutty a bit. That's always that's always a good time.
do you play with the Oilers alumni? I know they've tried to ramp that up here the last few years and play more games. Have you been playing with the alumni?
You know what? We just did a Chris Joseph did a charity game against the firemen about a couple weeks ago. So then we did one for the Hockey Day in Canada. So I've done a couple, but there hasn't been as much as as we'd like. We'd obviously like to play a few more games, but with a lot of guys not being from around Edmonton, the alumni guys, it's kind of hard to get the numbers up to dress a full team.
Okay. Because, well, there's right now, is there about 10 of you?
I think so. I can't think offhand. Somewhere around there.
Okay. And how did Struds look when you played?
Well, you know what? We played that outdoor game in Lloydminster, and he fell in the same spot three or four times. So he he was complaining about the ice, but no one else has seemed to fall in that same spot. So I think he still had his figure skating skates still on.
Well, so I was just going to say, Struds has been telling us that he's a way better skater since Battle of the Blades, but I haven't seen him skate. So you have?
No, I've seen him skate. I think he's forgot how to use a stick in his hand, too.
There's no. Oh, he was pretty sour on Friday that you guys played in a game. He's 1-for-1 in his career in the shootout. I'm sure he's told you that 1,000 times. Didn't pick him in a recent fireman game in the shootout. How come?
You know what? I just didn't think he was -3 and in a game in one shift. So Rob Brown and I had to make the executive decision and decide to sit Struddy out for the third period. So.
Oof.
You know, that's the first time ever that we've had to sit someone out for a little stretch. So, in a charity game, it wasn't what we wanted to do, but we had to send a message to him.
How did he take it?
Struds, he'll roll it off. He'll just say that you can't keep a good man down. So, but he wasn't good. So I decided not to go with him in the shootout.
Well, you know what? I like your hard ass style as a coach.
You know what? You got to make some tough decisions. That one necessarily wasn't so tough. I kind of was going to do that from the outset, even if he scored 3 or 4 goals. So try and keep Struddy in check every once in a while.
Well, see, I thought actually that by putting him in the shootout, I thought Struds purposely would not play well so he couldn't go in the shootout, because if he goes in the shootout and doesn't score, the aura's done. He's not 1,000. He's not perfect anymore.
Yeah, well, I guess I did him a favor then.
Fernando Pisani joins us. Fernando, you know, going back quickly, we had a few Oilers fans who wanted to reminisce a little bit about 2006 just because it's the last great memory that they've had. I want to talk about that shorthanded goal you scored in Carolina. Of all the goals you scored that playoffs, I'm having to think that was the biggest one. What goes through your mind when you pick it off at the blue line or going in all alone?
Yeah, it's funny because I was just showing my son that goal a couple days ago.
Oh, nice.
Starting to figure out, you know, he's 4 years old and he's getting into hockey pretty heavily now. So I just showed him it. But you know what? That whole play, if you ever kind of watch the replay on it, it was because Ethan hit, I can't remember whose stick it was, but just enough so that his pass kind of didn't go as hard. And I just intercepted it. It went off my chest and down in front of me. And I think I caught, you know, Cam Ward off guard because he was cheating to his blocker side, and it just seemed like such a huge space in the top right side of the net. So, and I just fired it, and it just went, you know, right in the top corner. So it seemed like, you watch those shows and, you know, time stands still. It was kind of one of those moments. It seemed like it took forever, but once I released it from my stick, it was automatically in the net. And yeah, it was a pretty amazing goal and something that I'll always remember.
What did Steve Staio say to you when he came into the celebration after coming out of the penalty box?
I don't know if I'm allowed to repeat it on air. It's probably a lot of profanity, but he was pretty pumped up. You know, he was obviously down from taking the penalty, but he just was jumping up and down, and he just said, "Thanks, buddy. I owe you one."
Then you guys come back for game 6. Obviously, you needed a must-win situation. You opened up the scoring. It was scoreless in the first, and you scored the first goal in the second period. And like you've been to Rexall. You were in the playoffs. It was loud. But that game 6, Fernando, that might have been the loudest I've ever heard that building. That has to be the fond memory of you for the playoffs, or is there another one that sticks out?
You know what? It seemed like every series that we went on to, it just, the building got louder and louder. And I remember we had the dressing room doors would open, and you can just hear, just before we went on the ice, you can just hear the excitement in the crowd. Like, it was just so loud. And, you know, just for warm-up too, right? Like, warm-up was packed. And every time we opened those doors, like when the trainers went to go put sticks out or water bottles, it was just, you just got butterflies in your stomach because it was pretty pretty intense and pretty exciting.
Do you ever get sick of that's probably the wrong word, but you mentioned you show your young son now. Do you still are you over the fact that you lost, and can you relish how fun of a ride it was, or is there still kind of that nagging bitterness of not getting it done?
You know what? There's always that nagging bitterness of not getting it done. You always... I help out at a hockey academy, and the kids seem to remind me about losing in game seven all the time. So, you know, it's something that you kind of learn to live with, but at the same time, you're not, you'll never forget it. It was something that going into that game seven, I just thought there's no way we can lose. So many things have gone right for us that whole season with, you know, with us playing Dallas and was it Stefan that missed the empty net and then us going down and scoring and getting that crucial point for us to get into the playoffs. And then, you know, us beating Detroit and then walking through Anaheim pretty handily. And I assumed that going into game seven, I just thought, you know, everything's aligned for us and there's just no way that we can lose. And the next thing you know, we end up losing the game.
How long did you have to go before you actually could buy a beer in Edmonton? Because I'm sure everywhere you went, people wanted to buy you a beer.
Yeah, you know what the best part is? Just the excitement around the city. Like, people were just so thrilled and excited and, you know, just being a part of that whole just excitement throughout the city. Everywhere you went, people were, you know, pumped just to be an Oilers fan and, you know, got to watch something pretty special and amazing.
Well, you definitely played a role in that and hold a special place in the heart of many Oilers fans for sure, Fernando. For the teams, the draft comes on Friday the 11th. What is Fernando Pisani going to bring? Why should a team draft you?
Yeah, what did Chris Joseph say to that one? His wife?
Well, he said he's a good party guy and his wife's hot.
Yeah, his wife's hot, yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's tough to say. You know, I guess you'll just have to draft me to find out, I guess. I don't know. He caught me off guard at that one. I should have been a little more prepared for that one. Yeah, I don't really have anything off the top of my head.
Well, you did a horrible job of selling yourself right there.
I know.
Like, a horrible job.
I know. Well, you caught me off guard at that one. Well, I don't usually let you catch me off guard.
No.
So
often, well, you know, I haven't talked to you in a week, that's why.
Yeah, so. That's true.
Shorthanded goals, can you at least throw that in there?
Yeah, I could score a few shorties.
Sure, I can. Yeah, why not? We'll do that.
Yeah. You'd be a good two-way player, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, kill a penalty.
I'll actually back check. I won't be like Rob Brown and hang out at the far blue line.
He's got sick mitts though, doesn't he, in men's league hockey?
Yeah, he still can dangle and shoot pretty good, so.
Yeah. Yeah, once he cuts his hair, it'll be awesome. It'll be even better. I'm not sure that'll ever happen.
I'm not going to comment on that one.
Well, we'll have fun with that at the draft. Don't worry. Yeah, Fernando, always good to catch up with you. We'll see you on the 11th.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks again, bud.